Well, you have to first remember that South Korea is a country of about 50 million people, half of which live in the Seoul metropolitan area.
Seoul and much of Asia smothered under a blanket of toxic air. It's Friday, March 8th, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Doug Bernard in Washington. Also ahead, North Korea ramps up its missile program. Global human rights take a nosedive. And recruiting, recreating one of the world's seven wonders of the ancient world. It's all on today's VOA Asia. Much of South Korea has been blanketed of late by smothering dust and smog, prompting the government to issue six straight days of emergency alerts. But South Korea is hardly alone. According to a new study, large portions of Asia are being choked by toxic air, many of them in southern and eastern Asia. IQ Air North America was one of the co-sponsors of the report, which looked at air quality levels in 3,000 cities globally. Glory Hammes is CEO of IQ Air North America.
The biggest steps that we took was actually measuring the air quality. So this is taking all of the most polluted cities of the world, and now what we're seeing is that they're heavily concentrated in Asia, and especially, I believe, 15 out of the top 20 are in India.
15 of the top 20 cities, as you say, are located in India, and then add to that Lahore and Dhaka. What is it uniquely about Southeast Asia that seems to be, I don't know, so inducive of such toxic air quality as opposed to so many other places in the world which also have all of the kind of challenges that you mention?
Well, not all of the places in the world necessarily have all these challenges. When it comes to the U.S., we made a decision there that we are going to move manufacturing overseas. So where we've moved manufacturing to is actually suffering at the very forefront of this air pollution. So it's industry that's driving a lot of the air pollution. It's also automobiles. It's the burning of wood. But we do see, of course, the main driver as industry.
So you really are suggesting that it is this expanding global trade and global market that we all live in that may in part be responsible for the degrading air quality in these places.
Oh, absolutely. Where we give economic opportunity, where we also need to lean on some of these governments to enforce and to have higher environmental standards.
So here's a bit of a surprise for me, and I'm sure they ranked up there, but anybody who's been to China recently, whether to Beijing or even Seoul, South Korea, or other places, can testify that the air quality is degraded. Why is it that China and some of the other East Asian countries seem to have a better handle on this?
Well, they're more of they're not at the level of a developing country. They're more advanced than that. So they actually have higher environmental standards. And in some of these more developing countries, you're seeing things like older automobiles. You're seeing where you see these stacks in pollution and generating energy. You will actually see some sort of filtration that's taking place. You'll also see in these countries, especially China, actually leading the charge in terms of renewable energy and solar energy.
Of course, I wonder if it's maybe easier for China to take a lead like that because it is such a centralized, controlled economy, whereas my perception of a place like India or Bangladesh or Pakistan is that it's really kind of more of a free-for-all.
Well, Well, you could say that. I know that countries like South Korea, countries are like China, they are more centralized, and there is, I guess, still there is these. There are these private country, private companies. I'm sorry, that are very much so entrepreneurial in nature. But at the same time, there are more stringent environmental laws that really require these companies and private individuals to toe the line in terms of environmental impact.
Gloria Hamas of IQ Air North America. These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com. Huawei has sued the U.S. government, arguing its legislation passed last year that restricts business in the U.S. is unconstitutional. Authorities in Pakistan say they have brought under government control 216 religious seminaries run by outlawed Islamist groups. Hong Kong is grappling with a tourist boom. More than 1 million people crossed the border in November alone. And residents near the disputed boundary in Kashmir said it was quiet overnight, their first lull since last week. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more at voanews.com. VOA Asia continues. On the heels of last week's Hanoi summit, North Korea is reportedly rebuilding a key missile testing site. This according to information gained by U.S. and South Korean sources. The site was supposed to be dismantled following the U.S.-North Korean summit in Singapore last June. Our Kim Miller spoke with VOA's Steve Miller about this new information.
Well, we had a number of reports coming out not only from South Korea's National Intelligence Service, but also CSIS. There had been some activity at the Tonggye missile site, which is also known as Sohae. And what they've seen is some minor repairs to that facility over the last few weeks. They estimate sometime between the middle of February up to the first part of March, which also coincided with the second summit between President Trump and Kim Jong-un from North Korea in Hanoi. Largely, that facility has been dormant for the last year or so as North Korea has suspended testing of its weapon systems. But officials here in South Korea haven't given any more details as to what exactly is going on there. We only have the information from the satellite images from CSIS and the report from NIS.
Is this revelation a surprise, considering it is coming out on the heels of President Trump and North Korean leader Kim's summit in Hanoi?
Well, it depends on who you ask. Several analysts have said that there are other test facilities that North Korea could use to test their long-range rockets. This one, the Sohae site, is the most famous. This is where they launched their ICBM tests and their other long-range and medium-range missiles, so it's the most well-known. It's also the one that Kim Jong-un pledged to dismantle when he met with Moon Jae-in earlier in 2018 as well. So it's unclear really as to whether it's a surprise or not. When officials were asked here in South Korea for comment on it, they wouldn't do that. And repeated requests to the Blue House, the presidential office here, went unanswered as well.
President Trump is saying that he has a good relationship with Kim. So what kind of an effect would this have on their relationship?
It's really unclear. You have to take a look at some of the statements that National Security Advisor Bolton made to Fox News just on Tuesday, saying that unless North Korea was really willing to abandon its missile programs, that the United States would pursue stronger sanctions against North Korea. And if you go back to the January 1st address by Kim Jong-un and other North Korean media, they said that unless the United States would alleviate all the sanctions against Pyongyang, they would quickly resume their missile testing and nuclear programs. So without a deal in Hanoi, this was the path that North Korea said it would take. Whether or not it's directly related to what happened in Hanoi remains to be seen.
VOA's Steve Miller in Seoul, South Korea. Happening now in Asia, shares were mixed on Thursday. The Shanghai Composite rose 0.14% and the Shenzhen Composite added 0.48%. The Shenzhen component, on the other hand, declined 0.23%, while Hong Kong's Hang Seng declined around 0.8%. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. And we're happy you're with us on VOA Asia. After a record-breaking 35-day stalemate over funding for a U.S.-Mexico border wall partially shut down the U.S. government earlier this year, congressional Democrats are now advancing their own proposals for addressing problems with the nation's immigration system. The Democrat-led U.S. House of Representatives will begin work next week to protect hundreds of thousands of immigrants left in legal limbo by Trump administration policy. VOA's congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson reports from Capitol Hill on the political debate ahead.
For 3 months, debate about a barrier at the southern border has kept the Democrat-led House of Representatives from setting its own agenda on immigration. Now, that's changing.
It's crucial that we pass legislation that will open the doors of opportunity for the hundreds of thousands of DACA, TPS, and DED holders who call our nation home. We must stand by our American values.
Hundreds of thousands of undocumented immigrants brought to the U.S. as children and refugees fleeing war and natural disasters, groups once protected by programs the Trump administration has now halted or severely curtailed.
This is not just about the trauma of the individuals who are protected. It's about trauma to our country.
House Democrats are set to begin work next week on a bill that protects those immigrant groups. But their efforts are a waste of time without broader immigration reform, Republicans say.
Any bill granting mass legalization and shunning real enforcement measures will be opposed by Republicans for the stunt that it is.
The president's top Homeland Security official told lawmakers that granting citizenship to illegal immigrants brought to the U.S. as children will help perpetuate illegal immigration.
So you don't think they're a security threat, you don't think they're an economic threat, but you wouldn't support any kind of pathway to citizenship?
I won't support things that will continue the crisis that we have at the border by serving as a pull factor alone, no ma'am.
The U.S. Customs and Border Protection's family detention policy overseen by Nielsen is also a top concern for Democrats.
Are we putting children in cages as of today?
Children are processed at the border facility stations that you've been at, some of the
And I've seen the cages. I just want you to admit that the cages exist.
Sir, they're not cages.
What are they?
Areas of the border facility that are carved out for the safety and protection of those who remain there while they're being processed.
Children detained at the border deserve proper medical care and legal representation, Senate Democrats said, while introducing a series of bills addressing the condition of those younger migrants. But any such legislation is unlikely to pass the Republican-held Senate. While efforts in the House to protect immigrants brought as children and refugees could draw some bipartisan support on a pathway to permanent residency. Catherine Gibson, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
What is it like to study in the United States, and what do you have to do to get here? The Student Union is VOA's blog that follows students from all over the world as they face challenges and opportunities of studying at American universities. Log on at blogs.voanews.com/student-union.
This news alert from VOA Asia, a report released this week, found that the number of billionaires in Asia is set to rise above 1,000 in the next 5 years. By 2023, the world's billionaire population is expected to reach 2,696, with Asia accounting for a full third of that figure. Visit VOA Asia Facebook each day for top stories. This is VOA Asia. And VOA Asia continues. UN Human Rights Chief Michelle Bachelet has warned that growing social, economic, and political inequalities are increasing alienation and instability in nations around the world. The High Commissioner presented a sweeping view of conditions around the world in a speech to the Human Rights Council in Geneva. Lisa Schlein was there and has this report for VOA.
Michelle Bachelet says inequalities in income, opportunity, justice, and the enjoyment of human rights exist in all countries, rich and poor alike. Tackling these inequalities, she says, is critical in overcoming the grievances and unrest that fuel hatred, violence, and threats to peace. Bachelet cites many examples of countries where the denial of rights has led to protests and violent crackdowns by security forces. She mentions Sudan, where people protesting harsh economic conditions and bad governance have been violently dispersed by security forces. She notes similar scenarios are playing out in many other places, including Zimbabwe, Haiti, France, Venezuela, Nicaragua, and the occupied Palestinian territory. Bachelet says she is shocked by the number of killings of human rights defenders around the world. She expresses alarm at the increasingly widespread attacks on journalists and media freedoms. The human rights chief says she is very concerned about government reprisals against victims, human rights defenders, and non-governmental organizations who cooperate with the United Nations.
Today, allow me to voice my concern at the apparently arbitrary arrest and detention and alleged ill treatment or torture of several women human rights defenders in Saudi Arabia. The persecution of peaceful activists will clearly contradict the spirit of the country's proclaimed new reforms. So we urge that these women be released.
Bachelet condemns the detention of members of the Uyghur Muslim minority in what China calls re-education centers in its Xinjiang province. Activists say that about 1 million Uyghurs are kept in what they call detention centers. Bachelet also does not shy away from criticizing the United States' migration policy. Thousands of migrant children have been separated from their families during border crossings into the U.S. Separately, Bachelet calls on Australia to implement more humane policies toward hundreds of migrants detained on Manus Island and Nauru. She says inequalities undermine social progress and economic and political stability, whereas human rights build hope. The High Commissioner urges nations to do away with the divisive, destructive forces of repression in favor of principled and more effective policies grounded in human rights. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This news alert from VOA Asia. In a widely anticipated decision, Thailand's constitutional court dissolved the Thai Raksa Chart Party for breaking regulations that ban on drawing the monarchy into politics. The unanimous decision stemmed from the party's move to name Princess Mahidol as its prime ministerial candidate. All the big stories come your way throughout the day on VOA. An environmental movement is growing in Europe and may soon hit the United States as well. Kids and teenagers skipping class to raise awareness of climate change and protest government inaction. While many endorse their cause, their method is controversial. Should students skip school to strike for political issues? Marcus Mayer Gellin explains.
Students skipping school to protest for climate action. This has been going on for months, mostly in Europe. Every Friday, tens of thousands of teenagers leave classrooms in Belgium, Germany, France, Australia, and other nations. Their dramatic message, why go to school if there is no future to live for? The movement started back in summer of 2018 with just one girl, then 15-year-old activist Greta Thunberg from Sweden. She refused to go to school on Fridays and instead sat in front of the Swedish parliament with a sign that read, "School Strike for Climate." Social media made her famous, and she soon gained a large following. Thunberg was invited to speak at the World Economic Forum in Davos.
I want you to panic. I want you to feel the fear I feel every day. And then I want you to act.
Thunberg's hashtags, School Strike for Climate and Fridays for Future, are now leading students out of classrooms to rally on the streets.
That's not democracy!
The government's don't do anything.
the world would be a lot worse place because there'll be extreme storms, droughts, flooding, wars over natural resources. So there'll be a loss of stability across the world.
The movement has picked up endorsements from German Chancellor Angela Merkel, British Labour Party leader Jeremy Corbyn, and European Commission President Jean-Claude Juncker, who said the students reminded him of himself as a young activist. Others have been less supportive. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison voiced his disapproval last November.
Kids should go to school. That's what we're committed to. We don't support the idea of kids not going to school. What we want is more learning in schools and less activism in schools.
British Prime Minister Theresa May also voiced her concern that children waste valuable lesson time that would be important to help solve climate change and other problems. But Greta Thunberg tweeted back that politicians have already wasted 30 years without taking action. Some of the protesters addressed their criticism directly to May.
If the children do something, then Theresa May will notice. People say children can't do anything, but they can do something else.
The movement has been concentrated in Europe, but local groups are emerging elsewhere. Activists hope to spread the message in the United States on March 15th. That's when many groups have declared an International Strike Day, a move that may create even more controversy. Marcos Mayagian for VOA News Washington.
Finally, we end with the Hanging Gardens of Babylon, words that evoke colorful images of lost riches. While debate continues over where the gardens were located, or even if they existed at all, researchers have collected decades of research to produce what they claim is the most stunningly accurate portrayal of what the gardens looked like when they were built 2.5 millennia ago. Henry Ridgewell reports.
A garden known throughout the world for its beauty, a name now synonymous with the disappeared riches of an ancient kingdom. This animation is claimed to be the closest representation yet of the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. The design by computer scientists from the University of Northampton is based on over 20 years' research.
It's not an artist's imagination. It doesn't come from an artist's imagination. It comes from archaeologists based on evidence.
The gardens were built by King Nebuchadnezzar II, ruler of the Neo-Babylonian Empire around 600 BC. Ancient Greek texts describe the gardens as one of the seven wonders of the world, suggesting they survived hundreds of years. Historically, they were thought to lie in the ancient city of Babylon, south of present-day Baghdad. But some scholars now believe they were located further north, in what is now Iraq's Nineveh province, around the city of Mosul.
We don't know exactly where the site is. I've made a suggestion. The site has been, it had many layers on top of the Assyrian things. We don't know how long the garden lasted.
Mosul and much of the surrounding area was devastated during the battle against Islamic State. Aided by the charity the Amar Foundation, which aims to rebuild communities torn apart by that conflict, the historians hope to build on this initial research.
It's positive and it has a social impact, which we are trying to emphasize on that, make the connection happen with the past, because people lose this connection because of the many wars they have, and this is unfortunate.
So could these virtual worlds one day be discovered in reality?
I don't actually think that it would be possible to find a garden now. We do have some quite good ground sensing equipment that might just help, but people will rob stones away and put them in their houses. So anything that was stone there has been robbed long ago.
Nevertheless, it's hoped the project will help to educate and inspire further appreciation of Iraq's rich cultural heritage. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
And that is VOA Asia for today and this week. Thank you so much for joining us. We'll be back again next week. We hope you will as well. Until then, have a great weekend.